Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do,
broadcasting from Huntington Beach, California, and from New York City, coast to coast, a big L.A. welcome from the Big Apple and from L.A. to all our listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave Nassani, Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, on the Caregiver Dave Radio Show, coming to you live from the syndicated all-positive talk radio network, HealthyLife.net, broadcasting in all 50 states and 135 countries with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg of the CaregiverSpace.org. Who's in Manhattan. Hello, Adrian. How are you?
Hello. Where'd Bernie go? There he is.
Yeah, we lost Bernie, and we don't want to lose him again. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Dr. Bernie Siegel, a man who is famous in his own right. Dr. Siegel was born in Brooklyn, New York, just like me. I was born in Bay Ridge, Prospect Park. I don't know where he was born, but he'll tell us. He attended Colgate University, Cornell University, Medical College. He holds membership in two Scholastic Honor Societies, Phi Beta Kappa and Alpha Omega Alpha, and graduated with honors. His surgical training took place at Yale New Haven Hospital, West Haven Veteran Hospital, and the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. He retired from practice as an assistant clinical professor of surgery at Yale General and Pediatric Surgery in 1989 to speak to patients and their caregivers. In 1978, he originated Exceptional Cancer Patients, a specific form of individual and group therapy utilizing patients' drawings, dreams, images, and feelings. ECAP is based on a carefrontation, a safe, loving, therapeutic confrontation which facilitates personal lifestyle changes, personal empowerment, and healing, and the individual's life. That's a change, isn't it? The physical, spiritual, and psychological benefits which followed led to his desire to make everyone aware of his or her healing potential. He realized exceptional behavior is what we're all capable of. And I can go on and on and on about
that. You can.
I can, because it's right here in front of me.
He's here.
We would take up the whole show just telling everybody how great he is. So, Bernie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My mother would like it if you just go on and on.
Is your mother still with us?
No, but many articles in magazines are written about the controversial Dr. Siegel in interviews, and my mother would always say, oh, I love that article about you. I say, Mom, did you really read it? But she's loving me. It doesn't matter what people said.
Yeah. Well, that's a great first question, Bernie. Actually, my first question that I ask people who come on the show, and then I'll ask you the great first question, is why was Bernie Siegel put on this earth? What destiny does he have on his life?
Well, it's to share the truth about life. I just put out another book called No Endings, Only Beginnings. And let me just list some of the things I've been through.
All right.
I had a near-death experience at age 4, choking on a toy.
Wow.
I had a past life experience when somebody said over the telephone, why are you living this life? I went into a trance, saw myself killing with a sword, realized that was, I was a surgeon today to make up for that. My wife was in my past life, and it was no coincidence that she and I met working as counselors at a camp. I was just talking to her about the camp, and she said, are you asking me out on a date? So I immediately said yes, because she was so pretty. I thought she'd never go out with me. And we end up getting married. I was born to a mother who was told not to have any children because she was so sick with hypothyroidism, they thought she wouldn't survive the pregnancy. And she wasn't strong enough to deliver me. So to quote my mother, they didn't hand me a child when they pulled you out because she couldn't survive a cesarean section. They handed me a purple melon. If it wasn't for my grandmother, I wouldn't be alive today. Because when they were hiding me from everybody, and as an adult, I learned this. Because if you look at my family album, all you see are covered carriages. Never see me. I figured, well, I'm sleeping, so they're not going to wake me up, you know, take my pictures. But my mother said that when I said to her, if I'm an infant and nobody's touching me and you're hiding me, how the hell did I survive? Because your brain doesn't develop, you don't gain weight, your immune system doesn't function. She said, oh, my mother took you, poured oil all over you, and pushed everything back where it belonged 4 or 5 times a day. So I became the most loved infant on the planet. And I'll tell you again that I know about body memories 50 years later with a shaved head. I was massaged for the first time by a woman. I'd had many massages by this guy we knew. But when we went over, he said, I'm so busy, can my wife do one of you? So my wife and I went for a massage. The woman massaged me. When she started doing my head, I knew I went back to being an infant. All the body memories that was. And it was a total bliss. But when I opened my eyes, the room was filled with 20 or 25 people. I said, I'm getting a massage. What the hell are you all doing here? The husband said, we thought you had a heart attack or a stroke. We couldn't communicate with you. You were gone. I said,
what age was that? What age?
Infant. I was in my 50s.
Wow.
I said, I became an infant then, and I couldn't communicate with you. You know, I'm perfectly happy, and they're scared to death over what happened to me. And let me also add, why did I shave my head in the 1970s? Our kids had their hair down to their shoulders.
Right.
When I said, I'm going to have my head shaved, we'll kill the barber if he does it for you. And I told the barber, I'll go on vacation. Nobody will know, which was a lie. So on Friday night, he shaved my head. And, you know, the kids knew they had a crazy father. What are they going to do with him? But when you have a shaved head in the 1970s, everybody knew you were screwed up. So they all talked about their troubles in the hospital and everywhere. When did I learn why I really did it? Because I had to do it. That's the only way I could describe it to you. I'm reading Carl Jung, and it said, when monks shave their head, it's symbolic of uncovering their spirituality. When I read that, it was like, oh, my God, I didn't need to shave my head. I needed to uncover my spirituality. Because it was painful to be a surgeon and try to figure out why God made a world where people go through all this suffering. And I did a lot of children's surgery. And you really wonder, why would God have children born with all these defects? You know, mechanical, intestinal obstruction, all sorts of things that you have to operate on them as newborns to repair. And so that was a struggle, finding my faith. I questioned Abraham and Jesus, too. I mean, what would you say if God came to you and said, I want you to sacrifice one of your kids? Would you say, okay? See, when I read that...
Abraham before, did.
Yeah, because he had faith in his Lord. I would have said, leave the kid alone or take me, you know. And then I would have suffered for not having faith. But when you have faith, if you notice, Isaac doesn't end up dead. And if you notice the language in the Bible, Abraham says to his co-workers, you know, the guys who were helping him, he said, we're going to go off, but we'll be back in a little while. Now, if you're going to end up killing your kid, why don't you say, I'll be back in a little while? But he said, we'll be back.
Right.
And I think he knew that if he had faith in his Lord, he wouldn't be asked to do things like that.
Yeah.
And I have
and
to
he
add,
knew,
you know, my,
and he knew that God could even bring him back from the dead if necessary.
Yes. See, if I were Jesus, too, I always planned to jump off the cross and impress everybody. See? So I can do, so pay attention. You know?
Well, then you couldn't save us if you did that.
But it's doing the greater good. And let me finish with this so you'll understand, because I mentioned my past life, killing. I was asked, I was seeing a therapist, James Hillman, because it was so traumatic. I killed, in the past life, the woman who is my life today. My Lord said, go kill the neighbor's daughter. He's driving me crazy. I said, why don't I kill him? No, I want you to kill her. I said, what if I don't? I'll kill you. All right, I'm going. And I killed her. And when I came back to show him her head, he said, I didn't do it. You did it. If you'd had faith in me, I wouldn't have asked you to do that. And Hillman said to me, do you hear what you're saying? What? My Lord, my Lord. I said, yes, the Lord of the castle is asking me. He said, no, Bernie, it's your Lord. And boy, that hit home for me because of how I always questioned Abraham and Jesus. He said, go home and relive it. So I went home. I relived it. God said to me, I want you to kill the neighbor's daughter. I said, fine, I'm going. No, stop. He said, I was just testing your faith and know I could trust you. Bring them here so we can resolve this problem. And wow, what a difference, you know, that I learned from that. Because I thought using the word my Lord was just, you know, the head of the castle, the guy running shows. And I'd say we all need to define who our Lord is and who we're saying yes to. And by that I mean your Lord could be money. You know what I mean? It could be power. It can be all kinds of things. And you have to look at who are you living for and why. And if you find the right Lord and the true Lord, then your life becomes significant and meaningful. And I try to live that way. The way I put it is, I try to live the sermon. And let me add one more sentence, because as I was out speaking, my wife and children, my wife actually participated in the presentations, but they would be sitting in the audience. And I never forget people coming up to me saying, we can trust you in what you say. I said, what are you talking about? They said, your wife and children are sitting there in the front row. So you must be speaking the truth or you wouldn't have them sitting there. And how often do you see that with all our, you know, politicians and millionaires and others? What they're saying about life, and politicians, are their audience sitting there nodding their heads yes, or just, you know, not there at all?
So you mentioned before that you're controversial. So explain that.
Yes.
Why are you so controversial?
When I started doing this mind-body stuff, there was no science behind it. You see, we didn't study genes and body chemistry and all kinds of things. So when I say to people, what's going on in your life? Doctors would say to me, why are you blaming your patients? I said, I'm not blaming them. I'm trying to get them to look at why they may have become ill now. See? Monday morning, as an example, we have more heart attack, stroke, suicides, and illnesses. You know, you can't blame Monday. It's what people are thinking. But there was no science behind that because, you know, people just, as I say, I was controversial talking about feelings and emotions and saying that the people who got well when they weren't supposed to, it wasn't a spontaneous remission, which is what doctors called it. Solzhenitsyn, the author, called it in his book Cancer War, self-induced healing. See? So I'm calling it self-induced, and they're saying, oh, come here, crazy, there's no proof. And so they loved, you know, writing articles, and I was on every famous talk show with people arguing with me.
What year was this?
I had to really respect Phil Donahue because the Oprah would invite me. I have to say, she agreed with what I was saying, but she'd always have four or five doctors there to tell me I was an idiot and didn't know what I was talking about. And I remember one of them said, well, you said this in the book. I said, I never said that. He's quoting me. Oprah opens my book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and it isn't there. See, it's how they were all interpreting what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And it was totally misinterpreted. And it
became there was science. Fake news back in those days?
Well, but let me tell you, see, what Phil did, I came in expecting to go up on the stage. He said, no, Bernie, you sit in the audience. I want the three women on the stage who had cancer. And I thought, oh, boy, he's read my book and he knows what I'm talking about. They're the teachers. And again, see, one of the incidents, one of the women who went out to Chicago for the show met an old boyfriend, stayed, got married, and didn't die of the cancer she was told she was going to die of. And to me, again, that's part of what I was sharing. It's no coincidence.
Sure.
Life has changed. I mean, I can tell you, some stories will make you smile. You know, they told me I have 2 months to live, and I don't make up any of these. I'm going out to Colorado to die in the mountains. It's beautiful. A year later, I called up to tell the family, what's wrong with you? I told you I would come to the funeral. He answered the phone, and he said, it was so beautiful here, I forgot to die. Now, and that's not a coincidence, because as we study, again, the genes get messages. The identical twins don't get the same disease the same month of the year.
Right.
You can have one woman get breast cancer and her sister doesn't, and they have the same genes. So, again, it's something that needs to, you know, turn on the genes, and books have been written about that. And as those began to get, you know, written, then I wasn't so crazy anymore, and I could go out and talk, and people listened. And
yeah.
Realized there was a part of it.
What year were you crazy, and what year did you all of a sudden not be crazy?
We started the groups, I think, in 1978. And I'll tell you, again, the sad part. I sent 100 letters to people with cancer. They basically, because one of my patients, I went to a workshop by Carl Simonton, who wrote Getting Well Again. He was empowering cancer patients with imagery. And my patients were there. I was the only doctor in a room of 150 people. See, that's the craziness of medicine. So my patients were sitting around me, and what changed my life was this simple statement. You're a nice guy. I feel better when I'm in the office with you, but I can't take you home with me. So I need to know how to live between office visits. When she said that, I thought, wow. I don't have to feel helpless as a physician. I can help people live, even if I can't cure a disease. So I sent 100 letters out saying, you want to live a longer, better life? Come to a meeting. I said to my secretary, you forgot to say it's only for the people who get the letter. Now, what am I going to do with all these people? Because I expected several hundred people to show up. 12 women appeared. And I realized I don't know my patients. I'm trying to help them live, and they don't show up. Why? I don't have time to read a book. I can't draw a picture. I could do it wrong. I mean, they're so afraid of failing. And that's why my wife came up with the term exceptional cancer patient. She said, those are exceptional women. And I said, all right, that's what we'll call it. And then a lot of people said, well, I'm not exceptional, so I can't come to your group. But it's how they were all brought up, how much that... Yeah, let me give you a statistic again. And you can answer in your head, too. Did your parents love you? Harvard students were asked that question. Those who said no while at Harvard, by the time they were middle-aged, they were all looked up. 98% had suffered a major illness. Those who said yes... 24% had suffered a major illness. So you have to say, why does that make a difference? It's how you take care of yourself, how you feel about yourself. Yeah. And I can also tell you, again, as I say, I don't make these things up. A woman who had polio as a child was angry that her body was deformed. Mm. And then she developed a neurological disease, which added more to her troubles. And she said, I didn't want to die hating my body. So I lay down naked in front of a full-length mirror and started loving my body inch by inch. And to make a long story short, by the time she was done loving herself, her neurological disease disappeared, and she didn't die of it. And those are the things that I began to learn over and over again. Everybody who didn't die when they were supposed to had a story to tell you. I got a dog I put in a backyard wildlife habitat. I bought a house on the ocean down in Florida. I didn't. You see, in a poem, I always say, read fiction if you want to know the truth. You'd say, what? the authors observe the world and write about it with their own characters. So it's fiction. They, and that's the part. So there's a poem called Miss G by W.H. Auden. In it, he says, when he comes home to his wife, said, I examined Miss G today, that lonely lady, and she has cancer. And he goes on to say, childless women get it, and men when they retire, it's as if there had to be an outlet for their foiled creative fire. Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned it at a medical meeting at Yale, and I heard yelled out of the audience, just because it rhymes doesn't make it true. Now, why would a poet write that if he didn't observe it in life? So, yeah, I've seen that with patients. And one landscaper I had retired and developed cancer. And when I told him he needed more treatment after I operated on him, he had stomach cancer, I said, I couldn't remove it all. You need more treatment. No, it's springtime. Gonna go home and make the world beautiful. So when I die, I leave a beautiful world. 6 years later, the nurse handed me his chart. I said, he's dead. We must have two patients with the same name. She said, Bernie, open the door. I opened the door, and there sat John. I have a hernia from lifting boulders in my landscape business. He lived to 91 and became my therapist.
Because
if I walked in the woods with him, it became a beautiful place to walk. He saw things that I didn't see. It could be colors, plants, and it was just joyful to walk with him. And matter of fact, our latest book, the one When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is, with our grandson, Charlie, and myself, Charlie's into photography. And so the book has loads of photographs of nature, as well as all our poetry. And
hold that thought, Bernie, because I need to take a break, and I want to talk about Charlie, because I can tell he loves you very, very much, because he was constantly, my grandpa's, you know, make sure you send him the link, because he wants, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
so you got a great grandson there who loves you. So hold on. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words by Dave Nassani is the book that helps you overcome and perhaps even prevent the hardships associated with strokes. Dave takes you on his journey and experience with his own wife, Charlene, a stroke survivor. This book tells you everything about strokes to help you and your loved ones survive without making costly mistakes that may save a life or a brain from irreparable damage. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. The book is available on Amazon.com or order it from fine bookstores everywhere.
Okay, so you have a couple of days off, and you're planning to get away from stress. You may be planning to go across the world or even taking a staycation around town. Well, Hotels.com can get you a room in over 158,000 hotels, 60 countries, for 50% off. That's reducing stress already. Plus, collect 10 nights, and you'll get one night free. And there's no cancellation charges, no change fees. For the best deals, even last-minute deals, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Hotels.com.
Guilt, fear, loneliness, burnout. These are just some of the things caregivers feel. But now there's hope. CaregiverDave.com is a membership website with an understanding community designed around supporting you. With a little perspective, planning, and practical help, you can become a thriving caregiver. Start by visiting CaregiverDave.com. Get weekly calls, practical solutions, and free resources. Plus, when you sign up, you'll get a 30-minute coaching call free. Don't wait. Go to CaregiverDave.com and join now.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity with Dave Nassani's book, It's My Life Too. Caring for someone with an illness or condition who is expected to live for a relatively long period of time is a specific and unique challenge. This book pinpoints the needs and strategies a caregiver must do for themselves in order to survive, thrive, and make caregiving a rewarding, gratifying experience. So get your copy of It's My Life Too today, or buy one for your special caregiver. It's My Life Too is available at Amazon.com and CaregiverDave.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret, now you do too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
And we're back with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Yes, the great and marvelous Bernie Siegel. And my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg. I'm Dave Nassani on the Caregiver Dave Show. And tell us about your grandson and the book that I interrupted you about.
Well, what is interesting is I wrote another book that just came out, No Endings, Only Beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's spirituality in my experience with life. And I was talking to Charlie about it, and it was like he was an old man who had a life experience that it took me 60 years to have. He's doing it in 20 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's written poems. So the book is filled with our poetry. And I wrote the poems, you know, like when I was 20 or 30 years older than he was, out of the pain that I was having as a surgeon. But he wrote them out of this spiritual nature that's in him. So, like we both wrote a poem called Trees, you know, and other things. I mean, it's just amazing. And so we got together and put this together and turned it into a book. And I may add, on the cover is one bird. It's from a photograph he took flying through the air. And I said, since it's two of us, I don't know if you can see that. Since there's two of us, why don't you have two birds? He said, no, that's the reader finding their way, and that we're helping them. And I love that. And he has those kinds of insights, you know. And so talking to him, I got him to help me with the other book, and then this book turned out. And I love it, too. And I
so in other words, life has been perfectly imperfect.
That's what I always say. I was going to repeat that. Yeah, that's my impression of life. And from talking to God, when I said to God, why'd you make a world like this? God said, Bernie, a perfect world, not creation. It's a magic trick. And I can tell you, my visits to heaven, where I'm a consultant, that, you know, everybody's loving everybody up there, and it drives you crazy. Because I walk there now, because I realize if you're driving and you come to a corner, everybody says, I love you, you go first. And then they yell, no, I love you, you go first. And nobody goes anywhere because they're all loving each other. So I just get out of the car and walk. Before they do. Because you don't need lights in heaven. Everybody's good to everybody else. But I think when people understand why is the statement, why we don't have a perfect world, it's to bring meaning into it. So when somebody does a favor for you, it really means something. You know, a Mother Teresa, a Helen Keller, and many others, these are people who become my teachers, you know, with all their troubles and other issues, but they see the world in a different way. Mm. And I think that we're all here to contribute, you know, to that's why I keep saying, to live the sermon and to be honest with yourself.
So what have you learned, Bernie, from your wife's life and her death?
Yeah, let me tell you, children. We don't die is for real. This past weekend was his Mother's Day. The numbers have quantity and meaning. I learned that from Jung. So people draw up, well, let me say, she'll tell you this reporter. She came to see me. She thought I was a nutcase. I said, draw a picture for me. She drew a picture. She had a big head, which told me she was intellectual, thought I was crazy with all my feelings. But behind her on the wall in the picture is a clock with one hand pointed at 12. So I thought, I'm going to knock her on the head. I said, what happened when you were 12 years old? I don't like deadlines. I said, there's only one hand on the clock. And then she fell apart. She'd been sexually abused as a 12-year-old. See? Yeah. When I drew a picture, what got me started in this, for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who became my therapist, she said, why is 11 important? I said, why do you ask me that for? You drew 11 trees. I said, yeah, I've been doing this work with cancer patients 11 months. I can also tell you the day we were married was the 11th. But you see, the pain I had when Elizabeth asked me that wasn't about, oh, I got married on the 11th. No, it was 11 months of helping cancer patients. But anyway, this past weekend was 9, 10, 11. My wife was born on 9-9. We were married on the 11th. 10th is Mother's Day. On the 9th, I threw a few things in the washing machine and dried them, took them out of the, and these were not things, clothing with that would have money in them at all. I took them out, and lying in the dish and the clothes dryer were a dime and a penny down inside on the metal, you know, piece.
That's 11.
That's my wife. Yeah, saying, honey, I'm here, I love you.
Wow.
And on Monday, it was even more extreme. I get out of bed in the morning. It's the same, you know, like queen-size bed that my wife and I slept in. And I go around to the other side to pull all the covers back and tighten it up again. I put my hands on the blankets and the sheet and pulled it towards me, and it pulled out of my hands, literally, and flew, to, you know, folded backwards to the other side of the bed. And what's lying on the sheet, on the mattress? A dime and a penny. Now, there is absolutely no way you can explain that. I don't go to sleep with my pants on, you know what I mean? And it would fall out. This was on the sheet that covers the mattress. Yeah. So we have found that it's either six or seven times I have found a dime and a penny in very weird places, including a bird bath in the woods filled with leaves and dirty water, that I heard a voice say, clean the bird bath one morning. So I dumped it out, and there was a dime and a penny in it. And years ago, when my mother died, we started finding pennies. It was really mystical. But one of the grandchildren solved the problem. They said, and this is a little pipsqueak standing in the yard, the pennies from heaven! So that became what it meant to all of us. They're pennies from heaven. And I have found innumerable pennies after my wife died. Also, I've had experiences, if you want to hear some of these, that I get into bed, I hear the sound that you'd make when you blew out a candle, and I feel a breeze on my face. I knew my wife was kissing me goodnight. There is no explanation for a breeze like that. And, yeah, and one night I even heard her voice. And I sat up in bed and said, do you need any help? And I thought, you're stupid. Your wife is dead. But I could hear her making sounds, you know, as if you were turning in bed going, you know, fixing yourself. So I know she's around me, and I accept that. And I have her photographs everywhere so that her presence is there for me.
Hold on, we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity with Dave Nassani's book, It's My Life Too, caring for someone with an illness or condition who is expected to live for a relatively long period of time is a specific and unique challenge. This book pinpoints the needs and strategies a caregiver must do for themselves in order to survive, thrive, and make caregiving a rewarding, gratifying experience. So get your copy of It's My Life Too today, or buy one for your special caregiver. It's My Life Too is available at Amazon.com and CaregiverDave.com.
Discover the world's largest anti-aging organization, Life Extension. For the best information, vitamins, and supplements, you just can't beat Life Extension. To start extending your life, go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Life Extension banner.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words by Dave Nassani is the book that helps you overcome and perhaps even prevent the hardships associated with strokes. Dave takes you on his journey and experience with his own wife, Charlene, a stroke survivor. This book tells you everything about strokes to help you and your loved ones survive without making costly mistakes that may save a life or a brain from irreparable damage. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. The book is available on Amazon.com or order it from fine bookstores everywhere.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
Guilt, fear, loneliness, burnout. These are just some of the things caregivers feel. But now there's hope. CaregiverDave.com is a membership website with an understanding community designed around supporting you. With a little perspective, planning, and practical help, you can become a thriving caregiver. Start by visiting CaregiverDave.com. Get weekly calls, practical solutions, and free resources. Plus, when you sign up, you'll get a 30-minute coaching call free. Don't wait. Go to CaregiverDave.com and join now. Remember, get positive emotions at www.healthylife.net.
And we're back with Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Yeah, well, but let me tell you the effect it had. No coincidence. What organ in your body is related to love?
Heart.
Your heart. 8 months after my wife dies, my heart went crazy.
Mm.
By that I mean what's called auricular fibrillation. It's just beating with no rhythm. But then the mystery of it. I head for the emergency room. You walk into the emergency room and you hear them announce, put him in room 9. I thought, oh, my wife's watching for me. We don't have a room upstairs for you in the hospital. Next morning, we got a room. What's the room number? 8-1. You know? And 8 is a new beginning. Then I look at the wristband they put on me. You have a personal identification and you have a case number. My personal number is, there's 1-8, then there's 2-9s, 2-6s, and 2-3s. Now, who figured that out? You know, you can add it all up to 9s. And the case number also did the same thing, except one day. I went to the doctor's office and I keep telling them, watch, everything will add up to 9. Then I looked and I said, oh my, that doesn't add up to 9. Then I realized it added up to 7-11, our anniversary. I mean, again, I can't explain them, but I have saved, they're somewhere near me here in the room, but I saved all those wristbands. So if anybody ever says, that's crazy, no, here they are, look at them. Yeah. And so I think my mind is open to the mystical nature of life. And I mean it when I say we don't die, no endings, just beginnings. Because as their 4-year-old, I had a near-death experience choking on a toy, I realized the body dies. Because when I started telling people what happened to me, I didn't know as a 4-year-old that this wasn't something everybody knew about. I thought it was a wonderful experience, and I truly was upset that I didn't die because it was so interesting. And I was mad at God. I screamed, who did that? When, again, I have an angel. So he did a Heimlich maneuver. All the toy pieces came out, and I breathed again. Back in I go. But most of the time when I talked about it, I always talked about the kid on the bed who was dying. And I thought, why don't you say yourself? And I realized, because I'm not that body. I'm not the kid on the bed. I'm this spirit consciousness that's out of the body. And that's what people will all understand someday. And one more mystical thing. Then if I'm getting too crazy, you can tell me to talk about something else. But I had a patient who came in one day and said, I've learned you're not a normal doctor. So I'm a mystic, and I brought a message for you. And she gave me a message from a patient with his name who had just recently died. I knew who she was talking about. And when I called the patient's wife, she shrieked. I said, I didn't call to upset you. She said, you're not upsetting me. That's what Frank said every time he left your meeting. I can't buy the package. And again, how does my mystic know that? But when my wife died on a Friday, quietly at home, I was shocked when I went to wake her up in the morning, because I didn't know she was dead. I mean, she looked fine, just lying there. On Sunday morning, I get a call from Monica, my friend, and I was waiting to see if she would call, if this was real, you know, with all her messages that she had given me. And she said, Bernie, I had a lovely talk with a woman who was an opera singer. And she told me, Bobby's fine. She's back together with the family and everything's okay. And what do you think my wife's mother was? An opera singer. Yeah. Now, how the hell could Monica know that? You know what I mean? So I'm a believer in all this and getting messages and communicating. But the key is, I learned from an animal communicator, my friend Amelia Kincaid, said, Bernie, if you're screaming and yelling because your dog disappeared or your cat disappeared, you're never going to connect with them. You have to quiet your mind.
Be quiet.
And that's something I would tell everybody. It's the symbol of the still pond. The Joseph Campbell talked about a tiger who grew up with goats when his mother died giving birth to him. Another tiger comes to catch, you know, a goat and have it for dinner and sees this tiger and says, what the hell are you doing here? And the tiger goes, eh. He says, I'm a goat. He says, no, you're not a goat. Come with me. He takes him to a still pond. See, you're a tiger. You're not a goat. And the ugly duckling, you're a swan. You're not an ugly duckling. When you quiet your mind, then you see. And that's when you get in the animal's mind. So if you ever want to have a program on talking to animals, I can do it for you. Because, you know, I thought Amelia was nuts when she said she talked to animals. Because I met her at an ASPCA, you know, rescue meeting for animals. But she said I talked to animals. And once I started doing what she told me to do, oh, boy. Animals I adopted would tell me, you know, what their lives were like and a whole host of things that just broke my heart. You know, when you've got an animal that's totally fearful. In other words, I'm having dinner. I want to give a dog a treat. I say, come here, and he backs up. I mean, what the hell's wrong with you? I pick up a broom, and he would cringe. And I realized that when I said to him, why is he like this? He said, I belong to a couple. Wife was lovely. Husband's an alcoholic. When he's supposed to take me for a walk, he goes to a bar and he drinks, and then he leaves me locked in the car and he abuses me. The beautiful part, I said, I love you. I'd never do anything like that. And the reason I adopted him, his name was Buddy, and I had written a little book called Buddy's Candle. And when I walked in the shelter, they said, his name is Buddy. He's been here 15 minutes. I said, I'll take him home. But what I learned was, a few weeks later, I accidentally opened the door on our minivan, you know, hitting the button when I put it in my pocket. And I thought, when I came out of shopping, well, he's gone. He was sitting in an open car waiting for me. And he felt my love, and his whole life was different. And my other dog, I laughed so much, because he wasn't in the car. And I realized, yeah, he's in Stop and Shop looking for me, and he was. But I got into his head, and I went into Stop and Shop, and the security guard said, "You looking for a dog?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I got him. I'm giving him treats. Here he is." But that's, you know, to me, all these examples confirm the truth about consciousness, you know, that it's not local. It survives. And so I have to share these things. And I say that because I just feel people need to know the truth about life, you know, and what goes on. Yes, there's grief, just like my heart. Was grieving the loss of my wife, but
of course
we're still there and we'll be together again. Yeah, it isn't the first life my wife and I have had, and I really felt, because of why I was supposed to kill her, was these two guys were fighting over land, and that when my wife and I got married, we solved the problem. Now we're one family and there's nothing to fight over anymore.
I hate to interrupt, but we need to take another break, so we will be right back. Don't go away.
All right.
Guilt, fear, loneliness, burnout. These are just some of the things caregivers feel, but now there's hope. CaregiverDave.com is a membership website with an understanding community designed around supporting you. With a little perspective, planning, and practical help, you can become a thriving caregiver. Start by visiting CaregiverDave.com. Get weekly calls, practical solutions, and free resources. Plus, when you sign up, you'll get a 30-minute coaching call free. Don't wait. Go to CaregiverDave.com and join now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity with Dave Nassani's book, It's My Life Too. Caring for someone with an illness or condition who is expected to live for a relatively long period of time is a specific and unique challenge. This book pinpoints the needs and strategies a caregiver must do for themselves in order to survive, thrive, and make caregiving a rewarding, gratifying experience. So get your copy of It's My Life Too today, or buy one for your special caregiver. It's My Life Too is available at Amazon.com and CaregiverDave.com.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words by Dave Nassani is the book that helps you overcome and perhaps even prevent the hardships associated with strokes. Dave takes you on his journey and experience with his own wife, Charlene, a stroke survivor. This book tells you everything about strokes to help you and your loved ones survive without making costly mistakes that may save a life or a brain from irreparable damage. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. The book is available on Amazon.com or order it from fine bookstores everywhere.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
And we're back with the marvelous Dr. Bernie Siegel and my co-host Adrian Gruberg. I'm Dave Nassani. We're on the Caregiver Dave radio show here on the HealthyLife.net, all positive talk radio. And you should like that, all positive talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
How can I have my dog talk to me? I mean, I suspect what's going on in his life.
You are the problem, as I said. You have to quiet your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like the still pond. And then you can give your dog a message. I mean, what I found was most helpful when one of our cats is always climbing fences and going off in the woods, and I'd send her a message at night. I'm worried about you. There are predators out there. You might not survive. Come on. You'll be a lot more comfortable in the bedroom with us. Come on home. And I'd open the kitchen door, and she'd be standing there. I mean, what? It really was, you know, amazing to me to see those things working. So, again, it's talking to them. Or even if they want to go for a walk, I can stand there and say, I'm going out for a walk. Do you want to come? I can say it in my head. And if the dog wants to, they jump up and run right over. And if not, they just give you that look. No, I don't feel like walking.
It's all right.
But
what does it mean when my dog, who obviously is very insecure, he's a rescue animal, he's probably been abused, he won't look me in the eye. I mean, I have to literally force his face to look at me, and he just turns away.
Let him know you love him. I mean, talk in your head. You don't verbalize it. You
talk
in your head. I want you to know I love you. I brought you home because I love you, and I want you to have a wonderful life, and I never will abuse you. I love you. Mm. And keep saying that to him, and it'll get through to him. I mean, sure, your actions should be the same. You take him for a walk. You give him a treat. But, I mean, you don't have to spoil him. You pet his fur. All those things, that he's a family member. And that's something you can say to him. You're a family member. Did you give him a special name?
A special name?
Yeah.
What's his name? Jackson.
That was what he was saying? Or even you call him Jackson?
Yeah, we gave him that name.
All right, good. Yeah, I mean, the dog I have now, I named him after a poem I read called Rags. And again, see, this is what the animals are like. I read this poem in a book. It's on the internet. Go look it up. But the punchline is, a soldier has many lives saved on the front line by this dog. So when he's discharged, he wants to take the dog home, and he can't find him. He gets back to medical school, and when I saw that line in the poem, it hit home. He gets back to medical school, walks into the lab, and who's cut open on the table? Rags. He walks over to him, and the poem ends with, he licks my hand and dies. And if there's no place in heaven for fealty like that, I'll take my place in hell. And when I read that, oh, boy, did that touch my heart. See?
Yeah.
And I'm always saying to people, if you don't know how to behave, ask yourself WWLD. What would Lassie do? You know, and do it. Because I don't know if you remember Ann Landis' poem that she had in her column. If you can start the day without caffeine, get going without pep pills, resist boring and complaining people with your troubles. Not treat a rich friend better than a poor friend. Face the world without lies and deceit. Con contention without medical help. Relax without liquor. Sleep without the aid of drugs. And say honestly that deep in your heart you have no prejudice against race, religion, nationality. Then, my friends, you're almost as good as your dog. I would often recite that to people, and they would think he's teaching us how to survive. But then when you get to the end and say you're almost as good as your dog, they burst out laughing. But it ain't funny. It's very true.
It's very true.
It is true. And that's why dogs are better friends than people, because they don't judge. They accept you just the way you are.
You can
beat them one day, and they'll forgive you. And
One of my books is Love, Animals, and Miracles, because I had people send in stories about animals, how they have saved lives, taught us beautiful things. Our house was a zoo. I mean, I described that in the book. We have five children. Everybody loved animals, so I put up fences, broke all the zoning laws. We had ducks, geese, goats, rabbits, skunks, birds, cats and dogs. But nobody reported us, because I found that was interesting when I learned you're not allowed to have all these creatures on your property. But nobody ever called the police.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I would call the police to say, there's an animal called the kinkajou. Imagine calling the police department and saying, my kinkajou disappeared. So if anybody called me, there'd be dead silence. What? But vets gave us animals that people didn't want after they got them. But again, the relationship, all the eggs were hatched in the house. So when our kids would go to school, the ducks and geese tried to get on the bus with them. They would go down the driveway and try to jump up on the bus. And the driver, you know, he didn't get mad at me because it touched his heart too, but he'd shut the door before they did. And when I would release some of them on a lake that my parents lived on, you know, when the yard got so filled with ducks and geese, I couldn't keep them anymore. My mother called the first time I let some go there. Why are the ducks and geese coming out of the lake every time a school bus shows up? Our neighbors want to know. I said, Ma, they're looking for our kids, and it's breaking my heart that they're missing our children. But you become family. It's amazing. And everybody had a name. Oh, and how smart they are. I mean, a rabbit. I would sit on the sofa reading a book. The rabbit would jump up on the sofa, grab the book in her teeth, and throw it on the floor. And I knew she was saying, the hell with the book. Rub my stomach, you know, pet me.
Right.
It's just amazing how, again, they are so well-trained, thinking, and accept each other. I've got to tell you this story. About 10 days after we rescued the rabbit, I didn't shut all the sliders and the pet doors. But I thought, because I left the house, I thought, but they've all been together 10 days. But when I got home, I realized I made a mistake because one of the dogs grabbed the rabbit and injured her. You know, he grabbed her like a, I'm sure, a stuffed toy and shook her. She had wounds around her head. And, you know, took her to the vet and was worked on, and she's home again. And I'd go out every afternoon when I was going to lock up, call her name. Her name was Smudge because she's the black rabbit. And one night, as a matter of fact, because I could never find her, I said to her, why don't you let me pick you up and take you in? Where are you? And she sent me a message. She said, you don't treat the cats this way. I said, the cats can take care of themselves, but I'm worried about a predator jumping the fence and you. And then she would let me pick her up. But this evening, I went out and I yelled and yelled and walked and I couldn't find her. Then I noticed a dog who was called Furphy because he was enormous fur, lying there, and I went over to pet him, and who was underneath him? The rabbit. He had become her best friend, hiding her from me, so she didn't have to go in at night. And that's what I felt animals teach me. What a sense of forgiveness. He threatened her life, and she is now best of friends with him.
Forgiveness.
You know, the true forgiveness. Yeah.
And you know, it's hard to believe, but we've run out of time, and there was so much more we wanted to talk about. But
well, I'll come back.
You will, good.
And so let's. How will people? Are you promoting? I assume you're promoting your new book.
Yeah,
I think you are. So tell us about how we can get it and how we get a hold of you.
When you realize how perfect everything is, Bernie and Charlie Siegel, Conversation About Life Between Grandfather and Grandson, through Amazon and the bookstores, it's available there now. Yeah. And the other book is No Endings, Only Beginnings. That should be available there, too. I haven't done a lot of publicity for it. But the two really... You know, it's because of Charlie the two things happen together because, well, he's helping me talk about spirituality and share poetry. The other book just blossomed out of that. And I'll tell you, there's one more that will come out called Three Men in Six Lives. It's about past life experiences. And, again, I just want to wake people up to all these things. I'm not trying to prove anything or really, in a sense, sell anything. I want them to know these things really happen. And
you are a different doctor, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show.
One more thing. See, when I said to medical students, draw yourself working as a doctor, they're sitting behind a desk with their diploma on the wall and not a human being in the picture. Only one student out of the whole class drew himself, putting his arm around a patient in a wheelchair and handing her a tissue. Not one other student had a human being.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next time. So, bye-bye.
So long.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing.